Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.
Boone hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series. Boone, a hero in Game 7.
Clemens has set a major league record for strikeouts in a game.
Derek Jeter with one of the most unbelievable plays you will ever see by a shortstop.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Welcome back to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Brian Shackman here, along with John Senecal. I represent. I always feel so bad about covering up my good hair at the end of the day, but I'm the Red Sox. He's obviously the Yankees. I call
this is
games.
Not,
yeah, you got
this
your
is not good. This is bad news right there. Bad news, bad, like what the Yankees are about to get into. Some bad news.
So I look at games 5, 6, and 7 as the rest, because when we started talking about this, I went back and thought about the 2004 ALCS, and I forgot when the slap of Arroyo's glove was. I forgot that it was an ALCS. I even forgot that the bloody sock was in the 5, 6, 7.
But so much.
After game 4, I literally don't have any memory other than maybe what happened in game 7, because it was so surprising and decisive. But so that's why I call the rest, because games 5, 6, and 7, they're almost kind of forgotten for me after game 4. You look at it differently. You remember these moments.
Well, I mean, game 4 was so big for you guys. I mean, how could it not? I mean, that turns the tide. But I mean, and you come into game 5 and you have like this insane 14 inning game. It's almost 6 hours long. Can you imagine sitting at a game for that long?
I can't. In fact, it was the longest postseason game in history. Now, that only lasted a year, and it's been broken a couple times. You know, the games are brutal now anyway, but it was like 10 minutes, 11 minutes shy of 6 hours. It took 14 innings. And when you go back and you read about this game, though, you forget how the Red Sox could have easily lost this one too.
Oh, absolutely. And Pedro and Messina are squaring up again too, which is great. You know, two of the best pitchers in baseball at the time. It's awesome.
Yeah, but you had a situation where the game time was just after 5 p.m. and it was directly after game 4. So there were, I think, less than right around 16 hours between games. So if they got a post-game meal, went to bed for 6, 7 hours, they basically had no time between games. And, you know, I think Poppy came up big out of the gate to give them a lead. I didn't realize Burning had a couple important solo home runs in this series, too. He made it 2-1, and then Jeter knocks in 3 to make it 4-2. And there you go. It's game 5, Yankees leading by 2 runs. And this is what I wanted to disagree with, sort of like you said, it was such an electric atmosphere. I wasn't at that game, but I was just, even though inspiring as game 4 was, I wasn't thinking the Sox were going to win the series. I still didn't think they were going to.
I don't think you can either. I mean, you know, it's a huge win, but you're still down, and the Yankees still have home field advantage. But when I watch this game back, I mean, it's unbelievable how much energy there is in the stands in this game. It is really impressive. And, you know, it's like you said, it kind of it goes in and out, and it's amazing that it goes that long, because, like, you know, the Yankees are down right away in this game, and Rivera comes in later in the game, and he has not had a good showing against the Red Sox. I noticed they had a stat on him since July 24th of that season. He's 0-2 with a 7.36 ERA. 3 out of 6 saves against the Sox, and that's including 6 games in the postseason.
So he was
he's not having a good time against the Red Sox, and obviously it shows in this series. You know, I mean, you know, Ortiz eventually, you know, I mean, he got a good hit against him, but I mean, he's showing himself. It's kind of getting rough on him.
Yeah, you know, I really start the conversation on this game in that 9th inning, because I didn't realize, you know, baseball, we talk about it all the time. Remember that scene in The Curious Life of Benjamin Button, where they do every little sequence before the love of his life, Cate Blanchett, broke her leg. And like this there's like 50 different things that if they had happened a second later earlier. But if you think about it, if Tony Clark
doesn't get the ground rule double,
right? If it's either an in the park hit, or if either it's an in the park hit, or it is a home run.
Yep,
it's over.
Yeah, it's amazing, and that's baseball, Susan. You know, that's what John Sterling would say. You know, I watched that back too, and I'm sitting there. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me! It's unbelievable. You know,
people don't know it's Tony Clark. I think Ruben Sierra was on base.
Clark hits it into the right field corner. That ball is going to bounce and go into the seats for a ground rule double, and that could have taken a run off the board for the Yankees.
Tony Clark hit the ground rule double, and he probably would have scored, but because it was a ground rule double, the ball was
in there, two outs.
He had to stay at third, and he never made it home. And
Cairo winds up popping out, and that's it.
That's it. And then you go, obviously, we're not going to take you through the 10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th in too much detail, but you come out on the 14th.
Damon walks. Cabrera, who was playing great for you, actually strikes out. And Manny being Manny, what does he do? He gets a walk. Sets up, you know who, Big Pappy.
Ortiz fights it off center field. Damon running to the plate, and he can keep on running to New York. Game six tomorrow night.
And it wasn't a big slappy, though.
No,
it wasn't a big slappy.
Well, no, he didn't hit it out. But I mean, that's the thing, is it didn't need to. And it wasn't something.
It didn't need to.
No. And the ball fell. The Red Sox won the game. And, you know, 6 hours later, we're now talking, you know, they are now in this series.
I'm still trying to think to myself, if I was at that game, how many people probably fell asleep in that game or, you know, passed out and woke up. And, you know, if it slept through, like, you know, like you said, I'm not going to take you through the 10th, 11th, and 12th. Take you right to the 14th.
Sally, wake me up when it's over.
Abby's up.
Yeah. I've never totally fallen asleep at the stadium, but I've been sitting next to quite a few people who did.
So I'm going to, like, real quick sidetrack. I was at Jim Abbott's no-hitter at Yankee Stadium against the Cleveland Indians, okay? And I was sitting, like, seven rows behind home plate with, like, my best friend. His dad was some, like, lawyer for GE, and he got really good tickets. And the guy in front of us passed out drunk in the third inning, right?
Early.
And woke up his buddy. What are these, Gaywood? And he jumped up in the ninth inning when Carlos Baerga, I think it was Carlos Baerga, grounded out. I could be wrong, but and all of a sudden he jumps up. He's like, ah! Like he sees the whole thing, man. And my buddy and I still talk about this to this day. It was one of the funniest things. You know, and I wasn't that old. I was a freshman in college. So that was a summer of my freshman year. So, you know, I went down there. I mean, I don't know. It was great. It was awesome.
We all had a few friends in college who passed out, but then if you rallied them, they would rally with strength. Now, going into game six, which is back in New York, obviously, you have a situation where it's 3-2. And I didn't know this, and people need to really focus on in baseball. In the world, no one had ever been down 3-0 and even forced a game seven. So this, no one had won this game six in the Red Sox situation before.
Huge game.
So this is the Bloody Sox game, right? This is John Lieber against Curt Schilling. Supposedly in the ALDS, Schilling hurt his ankle. I don't really know.
Hold on. It was a ruptured sheath around the peroneal tendon, right ankle.
Right.
I
had written down torn tendon sheath right ankle, so I think that's got to be right. So they did this. the doctors for the Sox did a couple sutures to try
stapled
to connect
it, right? They stapled it.
Yeah, I don't know what they did. So then the blood went through the sock, and it was this whole like Schilling's a hero type thing. And I actually want to get into this a little bit because he is a hero. Well, he sort of hurt his brand a little bit with his post playing days, politics, and social media, but he's still a hero in Boston, and part of the reason is that he's part of this team, but also Boston loves that warrior, and at least the story goes that this happened, and his foot was bloody, and he could hardly walk, and I'm just curious if you think it's all real, or if you think there's some myth-making here, because then there's some after the dust
I've been to the Hall of Fame, Brian, and I've seen the bloody sock. I cannot attest that it's ketchup or actual blood. There's no DNA. I did not take a DNA sample, but I have seen the bloody sock at the Hall of Fame. So as far as I know, it actually did happen.
You believe it?
Absolutely, I believe it. I mean, listen, do I believe it was stapled and sutured or whatever? I don't know. I mean, it was, listen, he had to have been hurt. He's covering first base like three times in this game, and starting in the fourth inning, he covers it twice in a row, and he's definitely hobbling, man. He's hurt.
I didn't rewatch blow by blow, but I watched a ton of the game. I don't remember him going over the first three times, but I'll tell you that. That's what I wanted to ask you. Do you think Torrey should have bunted some?
I mean, you could probably spend money all night on him, I guess, but that's a hack move. That's like, you know, I mean, come on. You want to win. You want to win, right? That's okay. You want to get up there and hit.
So let's talk about the game, because then we're going to talk about one of the maybe the biggest hack moves of all time that actually did happen. But we won't get to that yet. You know, I didn't realize also in this game, the Sox went up, what, like 4-0, Bellhorn, yep. Who was, love him or hate him. That home run was controversial too. Do you remember?
You're up 4-0 until the seventh, until Bernie hits a home run. Like you said before, Bernie has a couple of big solo home runs in this series.
So then that makes the score what?
4-1. And the bloody sock has just come out in the sixth inning too. So everyone's getting riled up. I can still remember, you know, can you imagine social media now, Brian, with the bloody sock? Could you imagine it?
It would have been a totally different experience. In some ways, I like it better the way it was, though, John, because like we were so clueless and only relied on the announcer.
That's it. All you had was that zoomed in thing and Joe Buck talking about it.
So we didn't have some reporter posting something on the internet. And, you know, I follow Twitter in game all the time when I watch this stuff now.
Some trainer who knows somebody who heard that he might have possibly slipped in the shower.
Yeah.
Or something. You know what I mean?
Anything. Any sort of conjecture. Then they have to comment on it on the air, and then it's totally different. But I like it the way it was. But six innings, one run, and he left with a lead.
Awesome.
It was gutsy. And you know what? Schilling is part of the legend. You know, the whole story about how Theo flew out, I don't know, to Arizona to, you know, convince him to come and all this stuff for the deal. And so, I mean, he's part of the Red Sox lore, and he – it's not like he's Parcells the way Parcells is for the Patriots, but like Schilling gave validation. He had won a World Series. He came to win a World Series. He was an original draft pick by the Red Sox.
I think Schilling, I mean, if he hadn't been such a postseason, post-career schlub, I mean, I think he might be a borderline Hall of Famer. I mean, he was a great pitcher.
Yeah, he was really, really good if he had had a few more years at that level. You know, and let's talk about, though, the Busch League move in this game, because it's really,
bottom of the eighth.
You know, so people were mad. The fans were mad about the Bellhorn home run because
never let a pitcher get you out of way.
That's down the left field line. Big trouble. Matsui on the run. That ball is off the wall. Matsui, I think for a moment, thought it was gone. It looked gone. Matsui reacted like it was gone, but then...
You know, they had a rule on it. Francona, originally they called it a double.
It bounced off the guy's chest. I mean, you know.
Yeah. But the thing is that, you know, they argued...
That's pre-replay,
right.
Too.
Which I'm fine with, but the fans hated it, right? And then, obviously...
But everybody knew it was a home run. I mean, you could tell. As soon as they showed the replay, it was instant. I mean, it was
you know, close your mind's eye and explain what happened between A-Rod and Arroyo late in that game.
Well, I mean, he hits a little flubber down, you know, and Arroyo goes to tag him, and he does the bitch slap. That's what he does.
Off the end of the bat. Arroyo. The ball gets loose. It's down the right field line. Jeter coming all the way around. It's a one-run game.
And I remember watching that game clear as day, saying to myself, you've got to be kidding me. There's no possible way that they're going to let this fly. It was such a slap.
It was a Busch League move. I didn't know it actually broke a rule, though. Like, I didn't know that.
The thing about this, what kind of perplexes me about this is they put Jeter back at first base on this play. Like, why has Jeter got to go back to first base on this play? He's on the run while this play is happening. He's clearly not involved in this play, and they put him back at first.
He would have advanced anyway.
Right.
It ruled it wasn't not an at bat, right? That must have been what they ruled.
It has to be something with that. Yeah, exactly.
But then you have a situation where the fans, I didn't know, like, the Sox took their players off the field because fans were throwing stuff on
throwing
the field.
Throwing everything. Yeah.
And then there was another play where Orlando Cabrera was safe at first and they didn't think he was safe. Like, there's all, for a team that was playing at home, supposedly with the legacy on their side, they didn't get any calls go their way. So then the Red Sox, they become the first team ever to go down 3-0 to force a game seven.
And I mean, it's I don't know, as much as I mean, it's A-Rod too. Like, it's like, looking back now, as much as, like, I can't stand him. Like, dude, he's such a free pass and it drives me nuts because, like, in a way that, like, sets the tone too. It's like almost such a desperation move. It's like, this is what we need to, like, to get by. You know what I mean? And I'll go back again to, like, I said this in the last episode, is when A-Rod started with the Yankees in 2004, I never went to any more games. Right. I mean, he was A-Rod. And then he does something like this, and it's like, oh, my God, it just drives me nuts. And now I look back at everything, and I'm just like, that's just like, it's so fitting. Right. It's like, I can't stand him. It drives me nuts.
But I think your point is an amazing point, because I don't think it's really until then that I felt like, and it sort of bears itself out a little bit in game seven, which I'll get to. But I think that was the symbol of the moment when you felt like the Yankees didn't quite believe they could do it.
Right.
And that maybe the Red Sox were that sort of force of destiny almost, because it was at that moment where I turned and I was like, that is such garbage. And the fact that he felt he had to do it. Yeah, I think it's a great point. And, you know, and it bears itself out because you go to do the research on game seven, and in the Red Sox locker room, they rewatched the movie Miracle, which tells the story of the Miracle on Ice 1980 gold medal winning team that in Lake Placid. And what did the Yankees sort of counter with? They had Bucky Dent throughout the first pitch. And, of course, Bucky represents the 1978 Yankees, and he hit that home run at Fenway Park. To knock the Red Sox out of the playoffs, you know, in a horrible collapse for the Red Sox. And so here we are, Yankee Stadium, game seven. And, you know.
No bigger stage, right? Again, it was a repeat from 2003, game seven, and Derek Lowe against Kevin Brown. And Derek Lowe has pitched great for you guys. Awesome.
Two days rest.
Yes, and he's going to pitch great in this game. And what's Kevin Brown going to do?
He doesn't get out of the second inning.
No, he's going to crap the bed is what he's going to do. And I don't know. You know, there's been rumors about him doing steroids and stuff and all that, you know, and then Clemens had kind of crapped the bed the year before in game seven. You wonder if that kind of stuff catches up to him, you know, as the season goes on. And the age, they were older, but still, you know, Kevin Brown always, you know, he's one of those guys that look like he came jacked all of a sudden. You know what I mean? He's pitching with forearms like tree trunks.
and we hated him.
I was never a big fan of him.
He didn't seem like I've never met him. He didn't seem like he was a nice guy. Or at least a lot of these guys, especially in that era, and I covered a lot of NHL, a lot of the guys in that era, the money got really quick and they got so huge so fast, they just became jerks.
Egotistical.
Yeah, and just really difficult to deal with. They didn't need you and they knew it. And he struck me as one of those guys that. And then you see him 10 years after he retired, he'd probably be so ecstatic to tell a war story or two to you over a beer. And that's the thing about being our age. What?
You know who was difficult to deal with in game seven for the Yankees?
Who?
Johnny Damon.
Yes.
Who's going to be a future Yankee? But man, he scalded us, man. Holy crow. He finally came out. Johnny Damon's coming out party, game seven.
6 RBI, grand slam, 2-run home run.
Like, he just kept, he was like this, dude. Every time he came up.
But I always think of, and you know, Ortiz also had a 2-run home run in the game, but I always think of Moneyball when Jonah Hill talks to Billy Bean, played by Brad Pitt, and said, you know, is Johnny Damon worth the $5 million the Sox are paying him? No. And he talked about it. And Damon still stews about it to this day. About it. He basically said he had an okay glove, average arm, whatever. I think the Red Sox paid all that money to Damon for that moment in Game 7. Like, he could have hit 180 the rest of the time and it did not matter because
Yeah.
In the game, he took pressure, a little bit of pressure off of Ortiz to be the hero, and he just broke the game open and broke their backs. And even though Ortiz
Johnny Damon was a really great ball player for like 6 or 7 years. He really was.
He's a terrible hitter who had no arm. Like his swing is terrible, and his arm was weak, but he was a gamer, and he could hit.
He made contact.
I love him.
I feel like he was like a low rent Brett Gardner. You know what I mean? Like,
come on, he's better than Brett Gardner.
Are you kidding me? Brett Gardner's way better than him. He's still playing. Brett Gardner's got like 14 years or something.
He's still an annoying.
He came to the Yankees and his arm got worse.
Johnny Damon is a winner.
Oh, he's a great player. I love Johnny Damon.
Listen,
his arm got worse. It was like he couldn't throw anymore when he came to the Yankees. I felt like
it continues to overpay for people who did great things for us. He did the same thing with Jacoby Ellsbury. Look, even we talked about Tony Clark back in the day. You took him off our scrap heap too. He took Clemens off twice removed from our scrap heap. So.
You know what Johnny Damon did do? He had an awesome stolen base in the 2009 World Series. He had he popped up and then just took off and just.
So, what time did you watch this whole game?
Game 7?
Mm-hmm.
I did watch the whole game, but I mean, I knew we were done. I literally knew we were done. Like, it was. It was so hard. You know, the only other harder game to watch for me was the 2001 World Series when Rivera threw the ball away and then Womack got the hit. And then it was like, you know, and then Luis Gonzalez hit the bleeder to the center field. Like that was like those two games, that game and this game. But that game I had like hope. This game it was like
nothing.
Like right out of the gates, I was like, oh, my God, we're screwed.
The final score is 10-3. The Red Sox complete the greatest comeback in the history of postseason in baseball, down basically losing game 4, about to get swept, and come back, and they end up sweeping the World Series. So they end up winning 8 games in a row. And before we say goodbye and put a ribbon and move on to
what happened to the ball? Does Doug McCavin still have the ball? Whatever happened to the ball?
I think he eventually gave it up, but I remember he held on to it for a long time, and I don't know if he was looking for money or whatever. He might have sold it, but I remember how. It was a huge story in Boston that he held on to that ball. But as you know, as we recap what really was perhaps the greatest series in the history of baseball, you on the losing end, me finally on the winning end. What is your final takeaway after doing this deep dive, after researching this and rewatching all the games? What is your final sort of takeaway?
I would have to say that game five energy that I saw was pretty ridiculous. I mean, game 4 is game 4, but the game 5 energy that I, when I watched the game back in Fenway, it was like, I've been to Yankee Stadium when they've done big things. I've been there for no hitters. And like, it's just like Jess said last episode, there's energy when it's something about baseball. You can change the tide. You can change momentum, sports in general, but baseball, it's something there's so many, when you get that thing rolling, it gets rolling and it's,
yeah.
Like nothing else. Like baseball is such a streaky sport. And they just got that thing. They had it going, dude. That was it.
There are two things that I take away from it. One is how little pieces of circumstance can dictate the outcome. You know, whether it's Dave Roberts literally being safe by 3 inches or Tony Clark missing out a home run or in the park double that could have won the series. Like all these little things that happened that could have gone the other way. And the other thing is, to be honest, after 2003, I truly, and I mean this with all sincerity, I never thought the Red Sox would ever A, beat the Yankees in a series and B, ever win the World Series. I truly thought that would never happen. So it really, and I say this again, it wasn't until the A-Rod slapped the glove on Arroyo that I was like, this maybe I can believe. It took that long for me. Like my wife believed much earlier than that. I did not truly buy in until that moment.
I would say that would be the deciding factor, but looking back at it, the energy was pretty crazy in game 5. But yes, definitely the like we talked about in this episode already, that was a desperation move where it was almost like, oh man, we're down. Now we got to start cheating. Tie the shoelaces together, you know?
Seriously. And this, was one of the greatest things to watch on television in the modern era. For John Senecal, I'm Brian Schack, and this is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, Episode 5, The Rest.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.